Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello. After we'd recorded the first two episodes of this dumb little series, horrific allegations came to light about actor Chris Noth, who portrays Mr. Big. We're not going to get into these allegations in depth for the simple reason that we're aware a lot of you listen to this dumbass podcast as a respite from harder times in your life. We would never want to diminish or ignore allegations about powerful men, and we've included crisis phone numbers for the USA, UK, Australia, Canada, and New Zealand in the show notes. We applaud these women and all vulnerable people who speak truth to power, and we hope that they find some peace and justice. Now on with our silly little podcast.
Oh my God, they're only doing sex in the city again. This truly is the worst idea of all time.
Welcome along, everybody. And just like that, we're back
in the
with
money.
Sex in the City. Tim and Guy here. Listen to me. If you're new around here, here's what's happened. Guy Montgomery and myself, Tim Batt, are two New Zealand-based comedians who watched Sex in the City 2, the movie, for a year, weekly. We watched it over 52 times because I think we did some bonus ones. We then followed that up by watching the first Sex in the City movie a similar amount of times.
Also for a year.
We have not seen the original HBO show, the odd episode here and there.
We do not consider it to be canon.
It's not canon to us. However, my dears, we are diving into this new season, and just like that, and Guy and I have just finished watching.
On its release day in New Zealand.
We're at the water.
We
just
are.
For context.
It's 9:42 p.m.
We're in the mobile studio.
Yeah, in the driver's and passenger seat of a Fiat Punto. And the tide is out. We're in an estuary, so it's just, you know, sort of dry, seaweed-covered dirt as far as the eye can see. And we've just spent 43 minutes in the company of not four, but three of our familiar friends and foes.
Yeah.
And, of course, the fifth gal, New York City. And I've got to say, that was a total experience. That was an incredible journey. Like, the ending of episode one.
Oh, we're going to spoil everything.
This is a watch-along podcast. So
pause it now, go watch it. Like, we're going to fuck your shit up.
Yeah.
Big time.
But that was, honestly, I enjoyed it, and there's a few reasons I think why that is.
You're fucked in the head, mate, and I can't wait to hear you.
Number one, I am fucked in the head. Number two, I think to see these characters, and this is something that we speculated about a lot on, you know, some of the depths of our hardest moments on seasons of the podcast, is to see these characters in a new environment, to see them making new decisions is like... It honestly feels like groundbreaking television.
Well, this is a fucked way to assess this first episode of the new season. So based on the fact that you haven't seen this 40 times before, you're like, this deserves an Emmy.
Roughly, yeah, something approximate to that. But more than that, like there are some, incredibly, this is also written by Mattress Pikelet King.
And who, I think directed by as well, which is, I'm very confident on that.
incredibly funny. As you said when we were watching it, he is a man with some shit to get off his chest.
Oh, the dude is like, instead of just going to therapy like a normal human being, he's decided to bang down the door of HBO to get another season commissioned because he needs to work out his demons about how the world doesn't treat him good no
That's
more.
That's right. But I will say this. There is an interesting thing that they've done in this episode, at least, maybe not in the season of the show, which is they have set... this and just like that, they've set the show in a world where the characters are perceived as intolerable.
Sort of, but not in the way that they actually are. This was so fucked up, and I'm kind of mad that you enjoyed it and intrigued, and back to angry again, like a loop-de-loop on a roller coaster, which this was. Here's what happened, guys. I want to go big picture first, and then we'll dive in, okay? Does that sound good,
yeah,
guy?
Yeah, I'm ready.
This episode was complete fucking horse shit, and then to recover itself, they burn a character who has existed in the zeitgeist for, what, 96 or something? When did the show
25
start?
25 years, we'll say.
2.5 decades, they throw Mr. Big on the funeral pyre so that you will feel something after this horse shit episode. Everything is so terrible. Then they're like, you know what would recover this for emotionality? We'll fucking kill John Big.
And they lift his cause of death is lifted, I think, from like a rejected storyline.
This was leaked as the storyline for the movie, the third film that was written and never made, for good fucking reason. What we just watched shouldn't exist in the world. It shouldn't be out there.
I mean, there's so much to get through here. I would almost bracket this show inside of the, like, Ted Lasso oeuvre of, like, let's just give some people what they want.
You're out of your fucking mind, but I'm sorry to interject. I agree, Tim.
This show... In some ways, this show is made exactly for us. This show was not made for us at all.
Bro, a few times in the first 25 minutes of this 40 inextricably long episode, 44 minutes, I felt like Mattress Pikelet King knows what we've been up to, is keenly aware of the podcast, has listened to it, and has directed a few shots at Timbo and Guy Guy.
Yeah, it's you might have heard in the opening Miranda saying, Carrie, I love you to death, but I draw the line at podcasts.
There's a lot of podcast shit in there, folks.
He's hanging shit on podcasts. He's also, I feel like he's edging towards hanging shit on woke culture.
Which is,
I think, brilliant. It's not necessary, but I love him for it. I just think, Tim, like, you say that the whole thing's dog shit, and admittedly parts of it are. And, like, you know, the characters are still entitled and quite tough to spend time with. But, I mean, as I've already said, number one, they're doing different things. And, like, this is how you said it. This is, you know, it's familiar intellectual property. And, yes, we know the characters. But they have to set up a season. And we've got Miranda going to law school to study her master's in, like, human rights or something. We've got Charlotte, again, has not really been given a lot to do. Charlotte appears to still be, generally speaking, a nightmare, an overbearing nightmare. Carrie... alone in the world. Samantha, cast aside with about three sentences.
All right,
let's
fucking dig into this. Not three sentences. I wish it was three sentences. Three sentences would have been a lot more respectful than the, I estimate, 180 seconds they dedicated to denigrating Kim Cattrall. Now, this is the height of bad manners, Guy Montgomery. We have got an individual that has been along for the fucking ride, and we know that her and SJP don't get along. We know that SJP got executive producer rights very early on and has been a fucking diva to work with throughout the series. They had a falling out. Kim Cattrall eventually said, you know what? Enough is enough. I'm worth more than this. I don't need to be part of this. I don't need to spend my life around SJP anymore. So, and She didn't do it like super disrespectfully. In fact, there was a tete-a-tete, I believe, online, which we knew about at the time. I've just got a bad memory. And I believe that Kim Cattrall's brother passed away. I haven't re-looked this up recently, so I'm going by feel here. And SJP like sent out a public tweet about it or something. And Kim Cattrall was like, lady, this ain't it.
Yeah.
This is not our relationship. This ain't where it's at. And so, like, respect. She didn't call her a big flaming bitch or something while she was grieving the death of a sibling. But she, you know, acknowledged what was, I think, an open secret, that their working relationship was frayed, shall we say.
Yeah, well, and just that. It was a relationship built around work. There was no connection beyond that. And I was talking to someone earlier today about the series, and they said, that's right, yeah, Kim Cattrall's not it, because I heard she's tough to work with.
And I had to say,
no. I think you will find.
I mean, listen, we're not on set, but
this is, yeah, but
putting the pieces together.
Yeah. We've got our fucking flag to fly.
This feels like an SJP problem.
Yeah, and so the way that they address the absence of one of the core four, and honestly, probably fan favorite, like Samantha is the special source that makes this thing sing.
Listen, BuzzFeed exists because of multiple versions of a quiz where you answered questions and it told you which Sex and the City character you were, and everyone hoped to get Samantha. That is now responsible for one of the greatest journalistic outlets in America, okay? That was all based around this brilliant character, excellently portrayed for a very long time by Kim Cattrall.
So tell me this, Tim.
Yes.
Why is Samantha Jones no longer friends with Carrie Bradshaw and the gals?
Okay, so plot explanation. This is in the opening, because they're like, we're going to need to fucking nip this in the bud. The fans are coming back absolutely gagging for Samantha, and they're not going to get her because the woman portraying her has a fucking brain in her head and a bit of self-respect in her body. So they say, okay, Carrie goes on this big fucking convo with Miranda about how Carrie dropped her as an agent because it didn't make sense for her to be a literary agent for her in this day and age.
Sorry to interrupt, but this is preambled by the introduction to the girls. They're waiting outside to have a meal at a restaurant, and they run to a friend, and the friend's like, where's Samantha?
This is some rando friend who they call like Fritzl Betsy von Krum. Something.
Yeah.
She's got a crazy name, but can I sidebar this for a second? So this show does this thing where it'll get a crazed, usually woman, to throw at the gals, and it'll be on screen and be like, isn't this woman a fucking crazy character? It's like, man, all these bitches are off this fucking planet. Like, I don't relate to anyone, and they're not even like of this moment at all. Like, I don't even know boomers who are like this. You know what I mean? But anyway.
So they run to this woman and she's like, where's Samantha? Like, she's no longer with us. Charlotte says she's no longer with us. And the woman's like, what?
Tension. Because we, as viewers, we don't know how they treated
this. And this is also set in COVID. There's a lot of like sort of knowing nods and acknowledgements that COVID-19 exists.
Yeah.
But is over, as it is in all of America right now.
Yes, famously, they defeated the virus.
That's right. And they say she's not with us. And they're like, what?
Sorry, shouldn't laugh at that.
Yeah, and then she says,
I'm laughing at SJP.
We're laughing at the... We're laughing at our own circumstance.
Yes.
But they say, oh yeah, no, she's not with us, as in she moved to London. And then later on, so they tease it, and then later on we get the exposition, which is, as you were saying, SJP talking to Miranda, being like...
Yeah, so Carrie dropped Samantha as a literary agent. Because I missed some of the nuance, but it was like, it just didn't make sense for her to be a literary
agent.
Not
in this day and age.
Right now, yeah, you know, presently.
Because, and I'll tell you why.
Why?
Because Carrie's value as an author has been on the wane since Sex and the City 2, when she published that absolute dog shit book she put no fucking effort into, got slated in the New Yorker, and then took it incredibly personally, cheated on her fucking husband before blaming it on her three friends.
A move, I hasten to add, that Kim Cattrall's character, Samantha, tried to hide from her because she knew how fucking batshit her reaction would be. She was a good agent.
Yeah.
So anyway, Carrie fired her because Carrie sucks.
By the way, opened Samantha's fucking mail abroad to read their review.
We're back into fucking movie 2 territory, but okay. Go off, Kim. Sorry.
This is what this podcast should be called.
Go off, King.
On behalf of Mattress Pikelet, who is fucking...
He's clear, gone off.
He is emptying his gun into cancel culture and into podcasts.
The man should be banned from making media with this kind of budget. Yeah. Give him a blog.
That's right.
Can someone just give this motherfucker a Twitter account and like take all the cameras and crew away from him?
Yeah.
So, okay. Fuck. Carrie fires Samantha. Samantha, and this is all relayed between, remember, Carrie and Miranda telling this story. So Carrie's like, look, I dropped her as an agent and she dropped me as a friend. Her pride was hurt. I tried to patch things up. I've called her so many times. She won't pick up. She moved to Europe?
Yep, UK? To London.
She moved to London. So there's all this shit about how Carrie like tried her absolute hardest to patch things up and Samantha's acted like a right old bitch.
Yeah.
And it's like I am screaming at the fucking screen because like it is mean to bully someone who's not in the room. Like I don't get often. Yeah. I try, you know.
Is Sarah Jessica Parker in our car right now,
dude? That's fair, but that's different. I try outside of the realm of podcasting to persist on the side of my better angels by not negatively referencing people when they're not around to defend themselves, right? It's uncouth.
Yes.
These motherfuckers have not only done that, they funded a fucking key grip, a DOP, a soundie to record a constructive conversation they have about paying this woman that she cannot answer.
The veil is so thin between fiction and reality. Like, it is honestly like a 30-year-old piece of muslin that is worn to like just one fiber.
Yeah.
They are so clearly like directly addressing and sort of
it's that fucking cloth that Jesus' face is on. It's that old and that thin, that threadbare.
It is, it's insane. And also like even within the show, it's very easy to take issue with the way that Carrie's handling it, which is like she took Samantha's totally reasonable and personal decision to pursue a job in London, you know, to live her life on her terms, incredibly personally.
Isn't this rich guy?
Yeah.
That the fucking characters are mirroring what happened in real life. They're accidentally showing us exactly how horse shit SJP is.
It's like,
Character's portrayal of this.
How is Samantha doing literally anything for herself about you, Carrie Bradshaw?
Go fuck yourself, man.
We're a quarter of an hour into the pod
and 6 minutes into the fucking episode.
As you may have observed, Samantha is absent. And I honestly think we should... I'm going to open my door.
Oh, yeah, it's hot in here, baby. The mobile studio's heating up because I am spitting facts in the oven.
I'm going to pour some out for Samantha.
Okay, good shit. R.I.P. And fucking not R.I.P. Whatever the opposite of R.I.P. is, I guess it's P.I.R.
I reckon
that's what I'd throw at Kim Cattrall because you were right. You were fucking right, dude. You have been absolutely vindicated by this first episode. They've got nowhere to go after this guy. They killed off Mr. Big in the first episode.
It's crazy to me that they did that. I remember watching a cameo that Chris Noth recorded. Not for me.
Oh, okay, the service cameo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think maybe I was thinking about getting a Chris Noth cameo for you.
Yes, same, bro. I looked into it.
Too expensive.
I didn't do it.
But
he was putting up
an example, and in it he addressed the question of whether or not he'd be in the series. And he sort of like flippantly laughed.
Mm.
He like was like, well, I don't know.
Yeah, we'll just have to see.
And I wonder then if he knew. And it's interesting because before they introduced the fact that he was clearly going to die in this episode,
yeah,
I wrote in my phone.
Yeah.
Mr. Big is trying to kill himself. Because...
Okay, we'll go through how he dies, guy, and then maybe explain your thought process.
I'll walk you through... Because the two are actually aligned. I'll walk you through how I thought he was doing it.
Okay.
Basically, it's established early on. He loves his Peloton. He loves his exercise bike. There's a Spanish woman who lives inside of his bike. And him and Carrie joke.
And Big's mind, that's how it works, people. This guy cannot read.
And Big and Carrie joke about how he's fucking her or whatever. And so the first time we see Big, Carrie gets home.
He's got a thing for the Latin American woman, doesn't he?
Well, he does. He's always has him for Madam Carry On.
I will.
That's right. And so Carrie arrives home and Big's like, Oh, you're home. Time for wine, and just pulls out a bottle.
Yeah,
of wine.
Yeah, yeah. These women are drinking a lot of wine.
Are putting back a huge amount of alcohol. So he does that, and then later on, he's like, he's always going on to his Peloton. He's always on the terps, and then at one point, Carrie walks out, and she's about to go to a piano recital, and Big's just sitting in the fucking lounge, chuffing a cigar.
Yeah,
and she's like, "Wow, a cigar and the Peloton," and Big's like, "Yeah, what the fuck are you going to do about it?" And I'm like, "You want out?"
Yeah, yeah.
Like, yes. Here is a man who is making a series of decisions that are only going to lead to one outcome, which now, the show introduces. And I honestly almost thought that they were going to let him live because I could see, either in Chris Noth's or Big's eyes, as he was, you know, spending his last seconds on this mortal realm. And this is like the sort of emotional manipulation that you were talking about, which frustrated you with this episode. But I could see his desire to live. And I could feel his desire to live. And I could feel that even though he might have made these decisions and he thought that his marriage was exhausting or whatever, I could see he thought.
How do we know this? Because while Big was smoking his big cigar, behind him was a bunch of graphs on a computer monitor. That's so right. We can infer confidently from that fact, Your Honor, that he is still in the financial game. He is still a bigwig money player in New York City, a.k.a. the world's casino.
If anything, the financial game has finally caught up to Big, and that cryptocurrency is massive right now.
That was his idea, bro. It was in the book. Who do you think thought of the fucking idiotic idea of NFTs? Mr. Big, he wrote it in crayon on page 17, man.
He wrote down monkey picture,
Monkey picture,
and then underneath
for $200,000?
He wrote money and underlined it three times.
Why do you think these monkeys are smoking cigars? Because he was adding shit from his own life.
It's a beautiful scene.
They're from Mr. Big's brain, straight to your crypto wallet, your cold wallet.
Here's the thing, though, is I did think he... He wanted to die. Something that was going to happen. And then as soon as he was on the exit... So basically, his death works in parallel with a piano recital by Lily, Charlotte, and Runkle's daughter.
Guess what, everyone? A lot of time's passed. Lily is an adult now. She's a young adult. She's 18 or so. And also, she's fucking good at piano.
Yeah, she is sensational. And most importantly, Brady is a teenager now. And basically, the only character trait they seem to have given him in the series... is that he fucks like a maniac.
Guess what, folks? I got two words for you. Brady fucks. And this version of Sex in the City? And that, like, okay, they killed Big to get everyone on board. I'm fucking on board for this.
Yeah.
I'm on board for Brady being a king. A fucking storyline that we wrote, basically.
Well, our introduction to Brady is not in seeing him, but hearing about him, which is Miranda complaining that she stood raw dog with
Hold on. This is over brunch. Just you need to have that in your head. One of the ladies' brunches.
Yeah, yeah. They've been waiting to get into this restaurant. It's a classy restaurant. And Miranda says, I stood on a used condom in Brady's room this morning. And everyone's like, okay. And then she's like, but get this. I was in bare feet. And it is honestly... admirably visceral.
I like dry reached, man. Like, that's fucking crazy shit.
That's great writing, though. And that's part of what I loved about this.
I'm like, not great writing. Mattress Pugler King is out of his fucking element, and he is taking wild swings for the fences.
It's great. It's filthy. It's filthy, and it's establishing a tone.
Okay. How long have you been doing stand-up comedy, Guy Montgomery?
10 years.
Okay. You go into an open mic gig, you see a lot of things. One time out of 15, something like connects. And often what you're seeing is a lot of people just going big in any particular kind of direction to get a reaction from the audience. It's not particularly skillful or artful, but it's sort of where everyone starts because you realize that the art of live stand-up comedy first... before you do anything else, is to get a reaction out of the audience. Mm-hmm. This feels like an open mic gig. This fucking chat of Miranda coming out the gate by stepping on her son's condom.
Yeah.
His jizz is on her bare foot. I'm like,
no.
I was going to say some names of some New Zealand comedians. But
I don't think his jizz is on her bare foot. I just think, like.
She says it. She fucking said it over brunch. She said, my son's, what did she say, semen, I think? Semen was on my foot before 12 o'clock today. I mean, it might not be word for word, look, but she says
Brady,
it.
Brady, have as much sex as you want, but if you're going to leave condoms all over the floor, you've got to tie those suckers off.
Brother, listen to me. No issue with what Brady's doing. The king of his domain. Fuck, wear a condom. Good man, chuck it on the floor. Your mum doesn't need to be invading your territory like that, brother.
Oh, it's difficult, man.
He's done everything right, and Miranda has done everything wrong.
You know what? I agree. Miranda is breaking a boundary, but just tie the end of your condoms off, Brady.
You're not wrong.
This guy is fucking a lot. So we don't meet him. We hear that he's having sex. We hear that her.
We hear tell. Of yeah, these we hear fucking adventures.
Yeah, word has reached us that Brady is a fuck machine, and Miranda and Steve have given, like, they opened the door up a crack and he kicked it down. They were like, yeah, your girlfriend can stay over. And he was like, oh, great. Okay, so basically we're going to fuck the whole time and it's going to be kind of annoying for you. And so we have that established. Later on at the piano recital, where it's a great opportunity to catch up with the old ragtag bunch. You know, yeah, Stafford and Anthony are there and their marriages are in dire straits. They're having a lot of fights.
Yeah, Willie Garson, who passed away. So I've been trying to avoid spoilers and shit. And I didn't know Big was going to die. I did see on Twitter someone said, like, there's a big death. So I knew someone was going to
die. I see. I honestly sidestepped the whole thing.
Right. Good for you. But I do know that Willie Garson, who is Stanford, is in the first three episodes.
Which
and
is,
then he
I
tragically
think, yeah,
passed
and
away.
And episode four is quite jarring because Chris Noth shows up playing Stanford.
Spicy. Woke moment. Okay, guys. Oh, fuck. Oh, there's so much to tell. Carrie's this is the bit that feels so targeted to us. Carrie's, I mean, I know that the podcasts have kind of, like, you know, become the default thing now. So Carrie Bradshaw has now transitioned from author to comedian. And
what? To
Sorry. She's not to a podcaster. I beg your pardon. She's on with two comedians, one of whom is Bobby Lee, and I'm never sad to see Bobby Lee. It's a delight to see him pop up and shit. I didn't know he was in this, so that's great. And it's a, what's the fucking, Savage?
Dan Savage.
Dan Savage. It's
Love,
like Savage
Lovecast, whatever it is.
It's Savage Love. They're just doing Savage Love, but a shit job of it, and with three people. And Carrie Bradshaw was very brutish on it, which is just dumb. Like, she's been a sex columnist since her 20s.
Yeah. She gets asked if she masturbates on air.
Loses it.
And, like, honestly, you know, clams up. Like it's like you've been trading on sex your entire life, and now I understand that, you know, people are demure or whatever, and that different people are willing to divulge different bits of information. But I'm like, you're a 50 something year old sex columnist. You've been asked if you masturbate. Everyone knows you masturbate.
Yeah,
because everyone masturbates, Carrie.
Yeah,
it's not like
even
some
Santa
dirty little secret. Santa, he's the worst of all of us. That guy's fucking tugging himself off up and down chimneys.
Why do you think snow is the preeminent element of Christmas? It doesn't matter what fucking hemisphere you're in. It's a metaphor, fuckos, for cum.
And she gets asked whether or not she masturbates. And she freaks out.
Yeah.
Like, totally deflects. Becomes the most evasive and, like,
and not like skillfully either.
No.
Because Carrie Bradshaw in the series has always, like, got a quippy one-liner or something to throw out. She just fucking melts at this. And then rightly gets hit up by the, oh, God, I wish I could remember the string that she self-describes as, but, like,
the podcast host.
The podcast host is like Michael Patris, Mattress Pikelet King's so sick of Twitter that he's condensed all of the haters into a singular character, and that's the person who's hosting the podcast.
I'm trying to find their name.
Okay. I don't know if that'll help. I was more like, I'm
fairly certain that actor is a comedian as well, but I can't.
Yeah, they did a fine portrayal of the character, but it's the writing, brother. It's the writing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Rattles off as, you know, all the social identifiers that boomers now think are trying to, like, invoke, what the fuck do they call it? Like, cultural communism on us all.
Sarah Ramirez.
Yeah, who's portraying a non-binary Latinx podcaster with a crew cut, you know, all of your worst nightmares if you're a 60-year-old screenwriter who can't make his peace with the world.
Yeah, yeah. One of the last things you want to do is create a character you can't write for. Yeah, that would be a pretty fucking challenging situation. But they're in the podcast studio, and every time the host says anything which is remotely sort of modern, I guess, there's a button.
Is there even that? There's a total non sequitur. Like, they just they press this button and then just say random shit. But what does the button do, guy?
The button says, woke moment.
Like, it's a top 40 radio station.
Yeah, and I think it's to preempt that something woke is about to be said.
I specifically looked if I could, because I did rewind it three times. I found that moment so goddamn hilarious and unbelievable that I was like, there's no way that that is a physical button on the desk of the podcast host. They don't have other buttons. That's the only sound pad there. It's just one thing that they can press that projects a top 40 radio voice saying, woke moment.
So the podcast, by the way, is called X, Y, and Me, and it's introduced as talking about gender roles, sexual roles, and cinnamon rolls.
All my favorite rolls.
It is very funny.
I wanted to see if I could isolate the audio of that button, but someone talks
There's so much to get through. And for the, you know, aspirational runtime of this podcast, which is something that's finishing very shortly.
Well, yeah, bloody, hey, add a couple minutes to the clock. Yeah, yeah. There's a lot to get through.
Basically, Carrie is told afterwards, they ride in an elevator, the host and Carrie ride in the elevator, and the host smokes weed out of a pipe.
In the lift.
Like, vaping doesn't exist in, you know, post-COVID New York City.
No one's doing that. Come on. Mattress Pikelet King, I know you're getting some shit out, but no one actually does that.
No.
Come on, brother.
They've got pens for that now.
Fucking hell.
And is basically told, like, hey, when I asked you if you masturbated and you clammed up, that's not good content. So you need to open up about it.
Yeah.
And Carrie totally misinterprets that. Goes home, tries to write about masturbation, can't. So she goes.
She sits down at the trusty old MacBook, which I bet isn't an M1 because they're all old and we're constantly reminded that they're out of touch with the world.
Yeah, and she writes, masturbation in the afternoon is like a matinee, single use or subscriber, and then obviously realizes that's a train to nowhere, so goes into the bedroom and says to Big, hey, Big, jerk it for me right now.
You think Guy's kidding? He shits thee nay. This is the fucking scene. Carrie saunters in there and says, hey, Mr. Big, I'm going to need you to masturbate in front of me, you fucking dancing sexual monkey.
And then we have to watch Chris Noss start masturbating, which is fucking awesome.
Yeah.
But basically, I want through all of this to me is a sidebar to what I was trying to say about Brady, which is minor. But basically, it's established that Brady fucks. The next time we actually see him is outside the piano recital. The first time he gets a line.
No. It's inside the piano. Oh, no, sorry, beforehand. Waiting outside. I beg your
pardon. The first time he gets a line, he's inside the piano recital. Someone's playing the piano. It's a pretty intimate gig. There's like 100 people there. Mm-hmm. And he's just sitting there sucking face with his girlfriend so hard.
Woman 17.
Miranda's like, you got to Steve, who's also there and looks fantastic, by the way.
Steve looks so fucking cool and, now. Yeah, Steve has aged real well, and he's got a hearing. He's got a hearing. Hear
the whole gag with Steve is he can't hear, but he can still spell.
Yeah.
And
holy fuck, is that where Spelling Bee came from?
Steve.
Yeah.
I should have a Steve Brown. Steve.
Fuck, you should.
Where it's just all Boston spelling.
Okay, sidebar within the sidebar. Guy's been running a really great thing that's had multiple lives on stage and on live streams, which is Guy conducting a comedic format for a spelling bee. And I think the fucking genesis was I never put that together before.
I hadn't either. Huh. But basically, they're sitting in front of them. Miranda's like, you've got to tell him I'm sick of being the bad guy. And Steve's like, what? Which is a great play. And then neither of them even turn to say anything. And Brady just takes one moment from hooking up with his girlfriend to lean forward and says, Mum, we will not be sex shamed.
Fucking king.
And then goes back to his business.
Absolute rat king shit, my man.
His whole through line in this season better be the man fucks.
Dude, I am not here for anyone but Brady. Brady will see me through this fucking season, and I hope that he appears at least once in every episode. And I don't want a lot of him. I certainly don't need a lot of him. I just want him to come in, fuck, call everyone out on their bullshit, and bail.
Okay, I've got an idea for a segment which I think will serve us well across the season.
Cool.
And it's called I don't know what it's called, but it's your favorite.
Name it. It's your segment. Okay, you can call it anything
you
want.
It's called favorite character, least favorite character.
Okay, sick ass.
So I can hear from this, I can intuit that Brady, as of this episode, is your favorite character.
Actually incorrect. Samantha is, out of fucking respect.
Okay, fantastic. Who is your least favorite character?
I mean, it seems kind of obvious, but I'm going to say... Oh, I don't want to use it this early, though.
No, it could be the same person across multiple episodes. It's just to represent the shifting tides and allegiances we'll feel as
Anthony.
Anthony?
Yeah.
You don't like him?
Nah.
Why not?
Well, look, him and Stanford had a falling out. Admittedly, it sounds like Stanford was taking an awfully long time to get dressed for the musical recital.
Well, you know how people are. Some people are ready sooner and some people take a little bit longer to be ready, Tim.
But Anthony's acting like a bit of a fucking prick. He's scrolling Instagram through hot guys on his phone.
For his startup, Hot Fellas Bread.
Yeah.
They need to get some Hot Fellas to deliver this bread, Tim. It's a sourdough business.
Well, I won't be further drawn. My answer is Anthony.
Okay. So Anthony's your least favorite, and your favorite was Samantha.
Samantha.
Fantastic. I would like to say my least favorite, Charlotte. I sound like a fucking broken record, but she is so overbearing. She is all of these characters have moments where I do feel like they're having to reckon with some of their worst tendencies or traits. And she is trying to impose her idea of how a family looks and how they present themselves in public on her daughters before the piano recital. She buys these Oscar de la Renta dresses. Wrinkle.
Yeah, the whole family has to dress in the same dress, fucked up.
Yeah, it's floral. And Runkle, who's still on the scene and looks like he's done a couple of bags of cocaine, but otherwise...
He's on a skateboard now, guys. Yeah. It's fun.
Bald people don't age.
It's the Patrick Stewart kiss from God.
She's basically trying to force a dress on Rose. So, and it just, it doesn't read well to me. And she's just still so oblivious.
And as we know, a kiss is always a gift.
Fucking amen. And my favorite character actually is Rose.
Yeah, good
man. Is a young woman learning to stand up for herself, learning to stand up for herself in her relationship to her mother. She's an incredibly supportive sister. She goes to the piano recital. Lily plays the fucking ever-loving shit off of the keys. Yeah. Like, honestly, standing ovation worthy. The only person in the crowd who is not wearing a floral dress, but instead a tuxedo t-shirt and a novelty beanie, is Rose, who stands up and is like, fuck yeah, that's my sister. When we were watching footage of her in the recital, I thought, is there going to be a jealousy through line? Are we going to have two sisters who aren't getting along because one of them has clearly got a talent that's being spotlighted by the parents?
Mm-hmm.
But no, it's all support. It's all love. And I take my hat off to you. I absolutely love that shit, Rose. You're my favorite character in the series right now.
Good on you, guy. I'm right in behind you because she does seem like the one sane person in this crazy fucking world that Mattress Park Club has put us back in. Just when we thought this motherfucker had run out of ways to kneecap us mentally, he fucking throws this season at us.
Yeah.
You shit me with this stuff, man.
And there's so much.
This is madness.
Other stuff to skim through.
The only other major plot point that we've missed. We should wrap up here for duration's sake. Folks, leave them wanting more. Unlike fucking Mattress Park the King. The only other thing we haven't really got into that's significant is an insane scene of Miranda first walking into her first lecture. And she is the mature student by a number of years.
That's right.
Dare I say decades against these fellow academics.
She's got her first day at her university class and she spends,
But get this, everyone. The professor is black.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And Miranda.
This fucking woman's lived in New York City her whole 60 years on the planet.
Better yet, Tim, Miranda knew that,
but was still
somehow surprised.
So she goes in, sits in the wrong seat, and someone who they have a... 10 seconds of fun with because they're genderqueer. So, Mattress Park. Like, you strike again, you fucking asshole.
Someone who goes by they, them, says, that's where the professor sits. And Miranda moves. And then
Miranda says, he told me. And then they say, I don't know what the pronouns are. It's a thinly written character.
Whoa,
they say, quick with the pronouns. But, in a positive way, she nailed it. But then Miranda proceeds to just repeatedly put both feet in her mouth while she explains why she's
fucking
so force
feeding her entire leg down her esophagus.
An African American woman with dreads as the law professor in goddamn New York City, where she's always lived.
And the entire misunderstanding stems from Miranda having observed a photo of her on the university website.
Look,
guess what?
The thing sucks.
Sometimes people look different from their photos.
The speech sucks. The episode sucks.
No, no.
It's all bullshit. No. Brady's a king. We saw it coming.
We've got a lot to deal with.
Bro, I'm honestly proud of us for this reason. There was no signaling that Brady was going to be this cool. We saw the writing on the wall. Or Mattress Park Little King has listened to our podcast, one or t'other.
It's not outside the realm of possibility. I'm really excited. And honestly, the emotional heft of Big dying, it got me. Like, when
it
we
did.
Started
it
recording, I was still coming down from that experience. Mm. We're going to be releasing these as soon as we can after they're released in New Zealand. So
we're getting these pretty live, bro.
Yeah. So this is a watch-along series.
Sorry, did someone order the Pitbull? Because we are Mr. and Mr. Worldwide.
That's right, yeah.
We're getting these hot off the satellite, folks.
So we are literally, because two episodes dropped to markets launch here in New Zealand, we are literally about to either remain where we are in beautiful Westmere.
It's fucking nice
Auckland,
here, man.
New Zealand.
It's a good setting.
And watch ourselves some more Sex in the City. No. And just like that.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.